First, we thought the Russians had it. Then, we thought the Chinese had it. Then, we thought detente had ended it. But, oh no, oh no! Here it comes again! Here comes the Colonel!
All right. Tone it down. All right. Welcome back to the second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. And we want to get right into our program today because Nick at TerraPower has got some very important things to tell us about solving the problem and the worry we have with Iran and their weapons-grade uranium. And then, of course, Meyer Sassoon is going to drop in. He's in the second-year chair of the IEEE USA Energy Policy Committee, and he's going to tell us about the things that IEEE is recommending to industry and government. But first, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we have here on the set and find out today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Oh, Spirit of the Fountain, you're here with us. Good. Here's today's query. Are you ready? Haha, brace yourself. What Apollo mission completed NASA's last manned lunar landing? Could you tell us that? Do you know, old Spirit of the Mountain? What was the last NASA's manned lunar landing? What Apollo mission?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the others.
Oh, all right. Once again, we can count on the Spirit of the Mountain. The last Apollo mission of manned lunar landing was Apollo 17. Did you get it, huh? Apollo 17. All right, back to our show. And Nick Turan of TerraPower.
One great benefit of the reactor, which maybe you could infer, but maybe not, and that is that, so I said this thing can eventually run on just depleted uranium, but it obviously can't start on that because you have to have the... There's these two atoms of uranium, one that splits easily and one that splits more difficultly. And we can run eventually on the one that splits, you know, more difficultly. And but you still have to enrich the initial core. And so maybe what wasn't clear when I explained it all is that after you get a fleet of these things established, you don't have to enrich anything ever again. And so you have this whole fleet of reactors running sustainably without reprocessing and without enrichment. And the enrichment plant is something that every plant has to have, or every nuclear infrastructure has to have today, because that's how you get your fuel to be good enough to work, to continue a chain reaction.
Okay.
But that's also a weapons concern. So if you have an enrichment plant, you can run the same thing and get your uranium up to like 95% the one that splits easily, and that's weapons material, whereas reactors just need like 4%. So this reactor not only gets rid of the reprocessing plant, but it also gets rid of enrichment plants, which has sort of been a big news item recently with certain countries developing enrichment plants and saying that they're just making nuclear power, but other people saying, oh, you're making a weapons program. And we can basically eliminate that argument by saying you don't need an enrichment plant at all.
Well, that's pretty good. And, of course, you're talking about Iran, because we've had to follow that very, very closely on this radio program. And certainly when the worm was introduced that was shutting down the Iranian computers recently. But maybe, then, your technology could be the answer for Iran to have nuclear power, because they wouldn't have to do enrichments, and then there wouldn't have to be any worry about nuclear. Is that in the works with you guys?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's sort of my vision and the company's vision of what can happen. You can basically get nuclear power. You can have energy security because this core is going to last as long as you give it depleted uranium. And if you don't give it depleted uranium, it'll still run for 40 years. So you can really count on having, you know, a lot of electricity, you know, in this one can on day one, and you don't have to enrich anything, you don't have to reprocess anything, and everybody's happy. That's really the ultimate vision, like just this kind of... We're trying to separate the nuclear electricity world from like the nuclear weapons world, and this concept takes two big steps forward in that direction.
That sounds like some pretty good news, and of course, those of us who've made kind of a study of it realize that Iran does have an argument in needing to have a power supply. They need nuclear power, And of course, if they're going to develop weapons, we're not real happy about that. But it sounds to me like you guys could really provide the answer, and that's a pretty revolutionary idea. So I'm fascinated to know that you're actually making progress in that direction. Have you been in touch with the people in Iran?
We have not, actually, and they, to my knowledge, have not contacted us with an order yet, but I'm hoping they will, because this would be something that would fit their needs, as I see it.
Do they know about you? I mean, how would they contact you if they don't know about you and you're not contacting them? They might not have any idea you exist, or you're saying that they're probably reading the scientific journals like everybody else. Is that the rationale?
Well, we have kept sort of a low profile so far, but I think once we establish our partners and, you know, really start breaking ground on this thing, I think it'll become sort of a well-known thing that's going on, and hopefully they will notice it and be interested. So I think that's basically the plan. It'll make a much bigger impact on the media and stuff once we really start having the ball rolling in a more open sense.
Well, Nick, we have listeners in Iran. Now, they're largely nanotechnology scientists, because we've done numerous stories on them, on what they're doing with nanotechnology. But we have listeners in Iran, so maybe after the program airs, maybe you'll get a phone call from Iran. That would be an exciting thing. If we could solve that particular problem through American technology, that would be really, really, really very exciting.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. I'd love it. Give me a call.
All right. Well, Nick Turan, reactor physicist with Terra Power, I wish you Godspeed and good luck. What you're doing is a very, very exciting thing. I hope that you won't wait for us to track you down the next time there's some nice announcement to make and the progress that you're making, but you'll keep in touch with us and keep track of keep us up to date on the things that you're doing, and that would be very, very much appreciated. And
this is like my personal project. I have a public education webpage for nuclear power called whatisnuclear.com. So I don't know if you would... I don't focus much on the trailing wave reactor there, but it just kind of has a bunch of general nuclear reactor information. So you can look up reprocessing and enrichment, and it kind of has some info on that if you're curious.
And today I want to thank you very much for taking the time out from your busy schedule to be with us. So thanks so much, Nick. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Right now, I want to introduce you to Myers Hassan. He's an engineer with Con Edison, but more than that, he's the second year as the chairman of the IEEE USA Energy Policy Committee. Welcome to the program, Meyer.
Well, thank you very much, Colonel.
Now, I'm a little fuzzy on this. I have a lot of respect for the IEEE, the Engineers Association, and you've come up with a national energy policy, you and your committee. Can you tell us what that's all about?
Okay, I'd be glad to. If I could just sum it up at a high level, and then we can talk about any details that
sure.
you think might be interested to
yeah.
your audience,
yeah.
is that we need in this country to break our dependence on oil.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to achieve that, we need to reduce the use of oil in our transportation system. Our transportation systems use roughly about as much oil as we import.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're going to do that, we're going to need to electrify the transportation system, which means then that we need to have many more power plants to produce all that energy, and we need to couple this reduction in oil with a better management of our environment through a greening of our power supply. It's essential, and also we need to reduce our consumption of energy through better efficiency measures, and lastly, we need to make sure that our grid is up to the task of transporting this energy from the source to where it is used. So in a nutshell, that is what we cover in our energy policy recommendations.
Now, who do you make these recommendations to, Meyer?
Okay. Let me say first that... IEEE USA, being a professional society that is made up of professional engineers, is not a lobbying firm. It's not a trade that lobbies for programs that benefit the trade. This is a professional society, and our task is to provide information that is as honest and correct and professional as we can. And our audience really is the government at all levels.
All right, well, let me ask you something now. How do you answer the critics who say, gee whiz, we go to an all-electric society where all of our cars are electric? Aren't we just really trading gasoline, you know, for coal? Because half of the electricity is produced in this country comes from coal-fired power plants. How do you address that?
Yes, well, if we do nothing else but just construct more coal-fired plants, that's exactly what would happen. But our recommendations include a chapter on the greening of the power supply. That's essential so that we do not expand the use of fuels that produce damage to our environment. So therefore, we need to look at new ways of producing energy. We need to expand our nuclear power. We need to look at capturing carbon emissions from the fossil power plants, and we need to expand quite a bit our use of renewable electric generation. It's a very good question, because we can't go on business as usual and just think, oh, we're just going to reduce dependency on oil. It's a complicated equation that I mentioned now, and all the pieces have to work together to achieve the goal.
Well, that was my next question. We know that wind power is just plain unreliable. And we know that solar power, or we're told that solar power, has to become 10 times more efficient in the solar collectors, the photovoltaic collectors, in order for them to be even considered viable. So if we're going to be able to be sure that the lights go on every time we hit the switch, we're going to be relying on coal and gas. I mean, isn't that really the case? And nuclear, and tell me about that. You know, how do you feel about nuclear?
Okay, you're asking about 10 questions.
Yes.
But they're all important. Yes, we all know that wind is intermittent. We are relying in our recommendations, our recommendations are not something that can be done overnight, and it's really to get us going along a road that's going to take many years to fully get there where we want. But technology is changing very rapidly. Not only that, but new R&D efforts in areas where we hope that our recommendations provide the support to government to channel resources in an area that will tend to get us to the goal that we're looking for. So, for example, we know there's a lot of work going on what we call massive energy storage.
Mm-hmm.
That is, the today, up to very recently, we could store energy in batteries and so forth that are used in electronics, but we always knew that somebody flipped a switch, at that instant, a power plant somewhere had to produce that incremental amount of energy, and it had to be transported through the grid so that your bulb becomes alive. Now, with massive energy storage, we can capture wind generation when the wind blows, usually at night when we don't need as much energy.
Mm-hmm.
But if we put a massive energy storage somewhere in the system, hopefully even closer to load, because we can transfer that energy from the wind resources close to load, capture it, store it, and then during the daytime, during the peak hours, let it come back up, come out and be used. Therefore, we would not be dependent on the intermittent nature. You also mentioned solar, and yes, I think R&D efforts are bringing the cost of solar panels down, and this will continue in the years ahead, and it would be to a level where it becomes competitive with other sources. In the meantime, we have to work on the other side, which is to make cleaner our current usage of resources. And in this country, we have finally got over the idea that, yes, we can come to support nuclear power again, although it's been a very, very slow start, but it's okay to be cautious on something that society has to pay a lot of attention to, because we are concerned about the potential dangers of nuclear power. But with the technologies that are available today and all the power plants, the nuclear power plants that are functioning, I think we're over that, and we have countries like France that generates, I don't know, something like 80% of their energy from nuclear. So we'd like to see nuclear power expanded and not be dependent on any one fuel. So we'd have coal, we have gas, we have hydro, we have solar, we have biomass as a fuel source, we have nuclear, we have wind, and that is what will, in answering to your last question, that's what's going to make sure that we have the energy that we will be needing in the future.
Well, you mentioned way back there just a little bit ago that the idea would be to have the wind generating closer to the load, but isn't that kind of fanciful? I mean, aren't all the wind farms far away from where anybody really needs the electricity?
Yes, you're right. But that's where the massive storage, think of the massive storage as a big battery. So if you put the big battery in somewhere close to New York City, and the wind generation is somewhere further away, and at night it produces wind, it gets transmitted through the grid, and it's being stored in this device.
All right. Well, I want to ask you a little bit more about this. You talked about storing electricity, but the batteries are the development has been so slow. There isn't really any battery development out there that we can rely upon, is there?
Well, we had batteries not too long ago that we had to measure them in milliwatts. We now have megawatt storage devices. We have in this country some demonstration projects that will, like for example, what we call flywheel storage devices that are capable of now storing upwards from 1 megawatt. But a lot of R&D is going on right now, and that will improve the quality and of these devices.
So you see battery development then really coming along at a pretty rapid rate. Is that the case?
Yes, I think so, because it's always happened that when something's identified as needed and enough research takes place, which means that a lot of attention, people attention, is put to something. The developments do happen. People come up very creatively with with solutions. And I think that's what we're starting to see that. And I think you'll see that massive energy storage over the next 10 years will be part of the solution.
Well, MIT is experimenting right at the moment with the fusion and is able to create fusion. The only thing is that it takes as much energy to make the fusion happen as they get the energy out of it. But do you see a future for fusion? How do you address that?
Well, I think that nuclear power as a means of generation, I think, will need to be part of this. Now, the actual fusion will not be the only way, although right now, as you well indicated, it will not be very efficient. But there are other ways that exist today and that will be getting and are getting better and more efficient as more nuclear process heat is being made much more efficient. We're going to see that we're going to see nuclear science and technology improving quite a bit.
All right. So there's you see nuclear improving quite a bit. Do you see maybe nuclear reactors becoming smaller and maybe being closer to urban areas that emit just enough electricity for, say, a particular city or something like that, instead of the big reactors out there? Can you help us with that a little bit?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Colonel, because in the past, let's say the 50s to 80s, 90s, the grid was organized vertically, which means that a utility owned generation, the transmission, the distribution, and had customers. And when this was broken up towards the end of the 90s in many parts of the country, it spurred a huge amount of new ideas and new technologies that are starting to come. And one of them is that not only in the nuclear area, but in other other forms of generation, the idea of the very large power plant that would be situated somewhere relatively far from the load and connected to the grid is giving way to the benefits of smaller power plants of all kinds that can be sited closer to load and thereby avoid having to build a lot of expensive transmission lines that no one wants to see through their backyard.
Well, Meyer, thanks so much for being with us. That's all the time we have for today, but I want to have you back next week because of the very serious security question I want to ask you at that time.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Listen very, very well to your customers. Have ears that hear. Listen extremely well to what he's saying. Ask questions so you understand exactly what he wants, and then try to provide him something that will do that. And obviously with consensus from other people you talk to like that, I think you provide services and products that will sell. And that's the name of the game. This is Tom Beckwith. I'm the CEO of Beckwith Electric Company in Largo, Florida. No, that's not the Largo down at Humphrey Bogart. We're Largo in the Tampa Bay area.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.